Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, June the 20th, 2017, not quite officially summer. And we tonight are saying, welcome back, Reverend Pinkney. And within that spirit, we want to welcome our panelists who are on tonight, Brother Larry Pinkney, former political prisoner, and strong Black Panther, and our poet in residence, Brother Nat Turner. Sister Anne hopes to join us later on. She's going to be running a little late tonight, and unfortunately, our dear Brother Tom is under the weather and will be listening in. So tonight we are saying that the election night rider terror in Georgia is nothing new, and that slavery continues. And our news analysis, as usual, is an anatomy of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism, an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And at some point tonight, we hope some of our comrades that we met at the UNAC anti-war conference will be representing. It was an incredible event. Sisters and brothers from all over the continent were there. Sister from the Venezuelan people, African descent, informed us of their trials and their struggles and their victories. Sisters and brothers from Puerto Rico, Palestine, Colombia, all came to represent. And the incredible job they're doing in Richmond, Virginia, restoring our African burial grounds is simply amazing. So without further ado, I'll turn our mic over to dear Brother Ralph.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Sister Betty Davis. And as usual, this program, supporting political prisoners, will continue with the usual fervor. The overriding element in every situation in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people. Our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And I'm going to add on another Lynn-ism, a statement that Lynn had made often times in many locations. And what that statement is, and I think it bears repeating at this moment in history. And quote Lynn Stewart, "How is it that so many people who talk constantly about civil rights and human rights are willing to give up the most basic of human rights and are also willing to take it, that basic human right, away from others? And that right is the right of self-defense." Think of it. How is it that those people who talk so much about civil rights and human rights are willing to give up the most basic of human rights and deny others the most basic of human rights, the right of self-defense? That's Lynn Stewart. And so when I say wake up, now is the time, we have to be prepared. And I'm going to go back to a moment in time when I was visiting Lynn in Fort Worth, Texas, at Carswell Federal Death Camp. And I used to get there 4 a.m. in the morning. Because in these death camps, if they say visiting is from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and they cut it down from 3 days a week to 2 days a week, and people travel thousands of miles by plane, some by car, sleeping in their car, at the whim of the prison, they may decide that maybe the first three cars get in, and then the rest of the people will have to stay in line, and the line goes sometimes back a quarter of a mile with women and children sleeping in the cars, having driven half of the night. They just have to sit there and wait because the prison decided that one or two cars getting in the morning is enough. And so rather than be a victim of the capricious, vicious attitude of the death camps, I swore after being stopped in car number 11 and missing half a day of a visit that I would never be second in line to get into prison. And so to get into prison at 9 a.m., I would get there at 4 a.m. and watch the raccoon and the deer roam through the night, waiting for the prison to open. But on early Sunday morning, I would spend the time in one of my favorite hobbies and listening to gospel music. And there were two stations in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that played gospel music. And one had been on for 26 years, and one had been on for 22 years, I believe. And the ministers would come on with a little statement, and always between the statements there was gospel music. But this one particular Sunday morning, instead of having gospel music, they had gun dealers for a black audience, and they had call-ins from the black audience that had listened to the gospel music for 26 years and 22 years. And after a particularly heinous crime by white night riders, they were offering gun lessons, and people were demanding gun lessons, and they had two owners of gun stores and gun shops, and they were offering lessons in weapons. And most of the call-ins were elderly women who were saying they were sick and tired of the outrages of racists in Texas, and they said if they go, they're taking people with them. This is on Sunday morning in Fort Worth, Texas, 5 years ago. And I tell people the mood of the country is changing. Nonviolent resistance died with Martin Luther King. And when I turned to the second station, and it was the same, I can't tell you how elated I felt. And I tell people, listen, we have political prisoners who understood the dangers, the constant dangers of white racism in America for a long time, and they exercised their basic right of self-defense, and they are in prison. And as Lynn Stewart says, another Lynnism, Ralph, they have a different hill to climb than I do as a person in the death camps attempting to get out. And so she says, your work to get me out and the work of others who are working with you to get me out is easier than it would be, than it is in freeing our brother, black political prisoners. And she says, in America, it is different struggle. I am white. I am a woman. I have been in the movement for 50 years. Do not let me die in this horrible place. But always remember and always have a meeting. When you have a meeting to support my release, you must include all of our political prisoners. And a lot of people objected to that inclusion that Lynn insisted on. And when they complained to me that I was hurting Lynn's chances of getting out of jail when I included all political prisoners, I told them, Lynn said to me, never have a meeting supporting political prisoner Lynn Stewart that does not include all political prisoners. And some people did not believe me when I said that. And so I says, write to Lynn. She will answer you. And some people did write to Lynn. And Lynn's answer was stronger and more pointed than my discussion, to the degree where some people dropped out of the support Lynn Stewart movement. This is what we are up against, my brothers and my sisters, but we must continue the work to free our political prisoners, and I'm going to just read a short excerpt from the statement that I had made on behalf of the recently released political prisoner, Oscar Lopez Rivera. It's called Homecoming. The manner in which Oscar Lopez Rivera served our movement while incarcerated was and is a profile of courage. His perseverance in the face of continued government, mental, and physical torture was accompanied by a magnificent liberation struggle by his supporters that must be emulated by all on both sides of the wall. Ralph Poynter, New Abolitionist Movement. And I want to read that last sentence. His perseverance in the face of continued government, mental, and physical torture was accompanied by a magnificent liberation struggle by his supporters that must be emulated by all on both sides of the wall. This, my brothers and sisters, is our objective. This, my brothers and sisters, is our obligation. We must emulate that magnificent struggle, and it must be for all political prisoners. And I am getting the hook again, and so I'm going to return the microphone to Sister Betty Davis. Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. And before we go to our poet in residence, we're going to call on Brother Larry. But before we do that, I want to remind people that UNAC stands for the United National Anti-War Coalition. And this conference, as was the previous conference, emphasized wars at home as well as wars abroad. And the recent decision to release yet another killer cop brought instant response from the people. My question is, when are they going to stop doing the same old thing and getting the same predictable response? Obviously, marching and protesting is not enough. Words to the wise.
And a word from a philosopher, a religious philosopher, and I have forgotten his name, but the words were, to do nothing about violence is to encourage violence. Or nothing encourages violence more than doing nothing about it. Do you get my drift? What would have happened if the Vietnamese people had decided nonviolent resistance was the way to go? There would be no Vietnamese left to speak of today. When the North Koreans were fighting for their independence, America and its allies bombed them so that there was no building more than two stories high that stood in Korea. Dams were bombed. Power stations were bombed. They were bombed nearly into extinction because they wanted their freedom. It was the same stories that happened in Vietnam. They cut the country in half and fought the people who wanted freedom. We see the indigenous people in America. They destroyed it and they killed those who wanted freedom. But I'm getting the hook again, and I'm going to have to turn the program back to Sister Betty Davis.
I want to remind you that the gulags released one of our heroes on June 13th, and that is Reverend Edward Pinckney. And we will be hearing from him later on in this program. In addition to that, some of our young participants in the UNAC Anti-War Conference will be giving us their take on what they think we accomplished this weekend in Richmond, Virginia. But without further ado, we cannot start without going to Brother Larry Pinckney, former political prisoner, who, like Jaleel Montequin said, He was his own liberator, and he is a Black Panther. Not formerly, but as of this moment in history, he is a Black Panther. And I want to welcome Sister Ann Lamb. She made it just in time. All right, Brother Larry, you have the mic.
Thanks.
And poet in residence, who is our way of remembering our Sister Lynn, you be waiting in the wings, my brother.
Sister, you are amazing. Sister Professor Betty Davis, thank you so much. Obviously, this is Larry Pinckney speaking. Thank you so very, very much. First and foremost, as always, I want to give my love, my strength, and salutations to everyone, the listening audience, and to all those who will be on tonight's or this evening's program. Let me begin, and Brother Ralph, you know that you were among the first and foremost of those people, you and Sister Betty. And the spirit, and I repeat, the spirit of Sister Lynn Stewart carries on.
Yes,
as a matter of fact, it only gets stronger. So come on, let's take care about business. That's what Lynn would say. Let's take care about business. All right?
Right on.
So I want to move very succinctly because I know there are other people who are waiting to speak. I'm looking forward, as always, to hearing from Sister Ann Lamb. She's always got so much information about our political prisoners. And I just want to shout out to her and say, Sister, I respect you. I love you. I appreciate you and all that you have done and are continuing to do for our political prisoners. Shout out also to our resident poet, Brother Nat. Okay. I'm not talking about Nat King Cole. I'm talking about Brother Nat Turner. All right? Brother Nat, looking forward to hearing from your magnanimous array of poetry and how you just put it all in place. So anyway, and everybody else I'm looking forward to hearing from. Let me just say this. As I have always said, we must free our political prisoners. We must free them, because if we do not free them, then we are not free. Let me say that again. If we do not free them, then we are not free. So it is imperative that we do this for not only them, but for ourselves and for them. They are the warriors and warrioresses who fought and struggled for us. Can we do any less? Absolutely not. So I want to just throw out something. Look, sisters and brothers and sisters, our movement is not a movement about icons.
No, it's not.
All right? It's not about icons.
Thank you.
It's about the day-to-day struggle, the day-to-day drudgery, the day-to-day, ongoing struggle. It's not funny. It's not easy. It's not even exciting. It's drudgery. And we must carry this struggle on, all right? And that's where I humbly and respectfully say, no icons. There are no icons in this struggle. You dig? Sister Lynn Stewart, Lynn is not an icon. Lynn is a representative of what we the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. All right? Doesn't make her an icon. We don't need icons. We need the spirit of Lynn Stewart. We need the spirit of our brothers and sisters all over the world. And we need the spirit, first and foremost, of ourselves. Dig deep into ourselves and find out where our strength is or is not and deal with it. All right? So I'm going to, in because it'd be easy for me to carry on. I always love it how Ralph says, "I see the hook." I don't know how many people understand. You know, I don't know how many people really understand that. But back in the 50s, right? You know, and even before then, there actually was a literal hook that would, you know, all right, you're done. I'm pulling you off now. It was a hook, all right? So I don't want the hook. And Brother Ralph, you're so funny. I love you, Ralph. And Sister Professor Davis, you know I love, Betty Davis, you know I love you too. And I just want to say, let us understand that we need to not only intensify in our struggle, but we need to really, really engage in critical thinking. Critical thinking. That is incredibly important. We're in an age now where we have, well, I'm trying not to curse, so let me just say, where we have some real dumbasses who don't critically think. They follow a particular line, which is a line to the abyss of all of our people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, on this planet of Mother Earth. So, okay, let me shut up. All power to the people. Oh, I love you all. I'm gonna be listening to all of you. Thank you so much. Free our political prisoners. Free them all.
Free them all.
For in doing so, we free ourselves. All power to the people. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Larry. And without further ado, we're going straight to the poet. And Reverend Pinckney, your mic is open. We'll be going to you right after Brother Nat Turner. Ralph?
Brother Nat, let's hear it again.
Okay, this piece is called Low Regard. He kept Tester line, weighs less than lackluster, feigned brain farts for 5-minute filibuster, arch racist representing antebellum South, came whistling Dixie out his other mouth. Clever cracker reconstructing the stone wall, oinking 26 times, I do not recall. Tell me, is it blame game or race card fueling my low regard for Beauregard? Voter suppression is crackling sound like black churches burning to the ground. Maybe it's his framing of the Marion Three, longing to return to days of Robert E. Lee. Is it his bogus prosecutions for voter fraud while subprime predators loot and maraud? Maybe it's his belief in superiority of whites or waging lightning war against civil rights. Tell me, is it blame game or race card fueling my low regard for Beauregard? Voter suppression is crackling sound like black churches burning to the ground. Brooks Brothers Klansmen in word and deed would sport sheets if they didn't smoke weed. Old lizard, imperial wizard, exalted cyclops, green lightning Klansmen called killer cops. Beauregard's stonewalling ain't no mystery. Historically, the bass-ackward side of history. Tell me, is it blame game or race card fueling my low regard for Beauregard? Voter suppression is crackling sound like black churches burning to the ground.
Oh, righty, that's right on time, because tonight is election night in Georgia. And our theme was the next election night ride, terror in Georgia, and the slavery continues. Did I cut you off, Brother Nat?
No, good.
It was done. Yeah. great
thank
poem.
You so very much for that. And I hope we're all going to be watching to see what the vote was in Georgia. It's where gerrymandering and the Knight Riders ride through the voting booth and people are being disenfranchised and all of the voting rights legislation in the world does not change that. But I believe a bit of self-defense would and does change that. Where people are afraid to go to the voting booth, and where if they do get to the voting booth, the cards are stacked against them, and through gerrymandering and other dirty tricks. And so, right on time, with the poet and the message that we have to end this terror. And I say in a few hours, we will know that down in Georgia, where they estimate that each vote costs between $4,000 and $5,000 in terms of advertising, because it is very important for the legislative process, the outcome of this election. And I've been given the hook again. So at this moment, I'm going to introduce our recently released political prisoner. I call him the prophet. And people will say, well, what did he prophesy? I remember well what he prophesied when he said, fiscal emergency managers will be coming to you next because they didn't train 76 of them for Benton Harbor. They only trained one for Benton Harbor. And those truth tellers in America generally pay a price for telling the truth. Well, Reverend Pinckney told the truth. He says, they're coming to you next. They went to Flint, Michigan, where they put lead in the water, destroyed a community. They went to Detroit. They are marching across this land in the form of privatization in everything. Public schools are turning into charter schools in the black neighborhoods. You don't hear much about charter schools in white, wealthy neighborhoods. That's something for the folks of color and the folks who have a little political power. But next, we have to go to the prophet himself. Welcome home, Reverend Pinckney.
Yeah.
Your mic is...
Ralph, Reverend Pinckney here. It's an honor to be on your show. I tell you, I'm excited. I'm excited just to be on the show, Ralph, because I tell you, this has been a tremendous ride. I tell you, no one would believe it. No one would understand it. Even if you've been there before, you know, it's nothing like the modern-day prison, how they use mind control to control the prisoners themselves. But it's been quite a ride, Ralph. It's been quite a ride. And I'm excited to get home. I'm excited to begin this fight all over again. We're planning a big protest on July 11th at the courthouse in that Whirlpool Corporation. Our goal is to let them know that the Reverend is back. And I was able to recruit a lot of people while I was in there, and also from around the world. So many people was writing me and stuff like that. You know, I received over maybe 10,000 letters and stuff. I got 1,000 cards for Christmas and another 1,000 for my birthday. People was really, really good to me. You know, the correctional officers, they wasn't good to me, but you know, that's all part of the game.
Yeah, that's to be expected.
Right. You know, you expect them not to be good to you. Let me tell you this one thing that happened that is so tremendous. They had cut my telephone service off. They claimed that I had made a three-way call, which they know I did not make a three-way call.
Right.
That don't mean that I hadn't already made a three-way call, but on the time that they said it, it was unfortunately, it wasn't the time. So they cut my phone off for 6 months. Normally they cut the phone off for 30 days or something like that happened. I had people visiting me from all over the country, and one of the guys came, he wanted to write a book. And he came in, and he got permission. And we're sitting down talking. When he got ready to leave, they wanted to take his notes.
Yep.
So he didn't want to give him his notes. But here's the deal. He did not want to give him his notes, but he said, well, what I'll do, I'll let you make a copy of them. So when they made a copy of them, they had me arrested and put in solitary confinement. And they claimed, here's the kicker. They claimed that I was smuggling. They couldn't spell smuggling, so they spelled smuggling instead.
They're not good spellers, that's for sure.
Right. And so they accused me of smuggling something out of the prison, and which we know was a story because they had already taken away my telephone. If they take away my visits, that means that now I would have no contact with the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the law library, and over the loudspeaker, they was calling my name. Pinckney, the judge want to see you. There ain't no judge coming up here to see me. And he kept saying over and over again, about 30 minutes, the judge, you know, Pinckney, report, you know. And I never reported. So they came to where I was at. They said, didn't I tell you, didn't you hear them talking about the judge wanting to see you? I said, don't no judge want to see me. They said, the hearing officer.
Right.
You see, now think about this.
Different.
The hearing officer always
officer is not a judge.
In favor of the CO. They always rule in favor of them. 99% of the time.
Yes, they do.
You know, it's almost a done deal. So I walk in there and told the, let's call him a judge. I told the judge that that you have to dismiss this. And he looked at me in total shock because he said, dismiss? We don't have to dismiss nothing, you know. And I said, because I don't know how to smuggle. He said, look at that. How do you smuggle? And he said, smuggling. He looked at it, he said, yeah, smuggling, yeah. But then he hit me, then he dropped a bomb on me. He said, I don't care nothing about evidence. You don't need evidence. What do we need evidence for?
Right.
You know, he said, you know, I rule on how I feel. And I looked him dead in his eye.
America.
And yeah, I looked him dead in his eye and I told him, I said, you look like you feel pretty good today. He smiled. He said, matter of fact, I do feel good. And later on that day, he sent the report back and found me not guilty.
All right.
See, here's what's important about that, Ralph. If I would have been found guilty, I've been stuck in a level 5.
Yeah.
You see, and they knew it. So they, you know, they executed their plan. But they was dealing with the right man. Because I knew how to defeat them at their own game. And believe me, it was plenty exciting. It was a tough ride, Ralph. It was a ride that you would never believe. And unfortunately, I had to do 30 months. And every bit of that. Now the Supreme Court, after completing 30 months, is now interested in the whole case.
Right.
I said, that is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard, you know, because they knew in the first place what the case was. So it wasn't that difficult. But we as black people, we don't have a fighting chance because we're so divided. Even inside the prison system, we're so divided. We got people in the system itself want to be just like them. You know, they act like them if they have any power. They do the things they do if they have any power. And they continue to do the same thing over and over again. And that is one of the key reasons that if we continue at this pace, we're going to become a dying race. Because
And I don't know what your restrictions are, but I tell you my personal feeling, I see Mayor Reverend Pinckney in the future. If that's, you know, I think we have the horses. if they will allow you to run. Sister Betty is giving me the hook again.
Reverend
okay.
Tisby, I will continue, but I want to interrupt and give the public some background on this case. That after serving the minimum sentence of 30 months, as you pointed out, you have a welcome home celebration on Saturday, July 8th at 2 p.m. at St. Matthew's St. Joseph's Episcopal Church at 8850 Woodward Avenue. And that people who want to send donations can send it to NOW, Moratorium NOW Coalition. I'll say it again, Moratorium NOW Coalition, 5920, that's 5922nd Avenue, Detroit, Michigan, 48202. I'll say it again. Moratorium NOW Coalition, 5920 2nd Avenue, Detroit, Michigan, zip code 48202. And on the memo line of your check, you should write, "Welcome home, Reverend Pinckney." Those of you who are new to this case, on December 15th, Reverend Edward Pinckney, a leader in the struggle for social and economic justice for the residents of Benton Harbor, Michigan, was sentenced to up to 10 years in prison on the basis of thin circumstantial evidence that a few dates may have been altered on a recall petition against the city mayor. The interesting thing about that recall petition is that the city was responsible for it. They were the ones who were supposed to secure it. The recall was prompted by the mayor's continued support for tax evasion by the Whirlpool Corporation, the Fortune 500 company and $19 billion global appliance manufacturer is headquartered in Benton Harbor. As we wrote last week in depth, the politically motivated prosecution against Pinckney killed the petition to recall Hightower, who many believe would have been ousted as mayor due to his ongoing protection of Whirlpool's interests at the expense of impoverished Benton Harbor, which is over 90% African American. So let's be clear. Reverend Pinckney has been organizing his community in a war against Whirlpool that reduced Whirlpool's stock to junk mail value on the stock market. This was a war of all wars against a corporation. In addition, those of us that are sick of the Democrats and the Republicans and anything else they want to be this week, we have the power of referendum. And this is what a recall. And this is what made this man dangerous to people like Hillary Clinton and, yes, Bernie Sanders as well. So, Reverend, back to you. And Sister Ann, we're so happy you made it. We're waiting to hear, you know, your report on the different political prisoners in our gulag. Reverend Pinckney.
May I interrupt? This is Larry Pinckney. I want to say something that I think is extremely important. I haven't heard it yet, so I'm going to say it as a former political prisoner of 10 years. All right? I think that all praise needs to be given to those black, white, brown, red, and yellow people out there who support our political prisoners, including Reverend Edward Pinckney. There were many, many thousands of people who did that. And so I want to say, on behalf of all political prisoners, thank you. Thank you for your support, and we need to intensify and increase that support. All power to the people. Thank you.
Thank you.
All of our political prisoners need a defense committee, and I'm a little bit angry with the Reverend Pinckney Defense Committee here in New York, because they were tenacious. And even on the most outrageous days, with rain, snow, and sleet, they were in front of the department stores that were selling a Whirlpool products.
and I had to be there. So I say I'm not mad, but I was certainly hurting on some of those cold, snowy days. When you had to stand there for the hours for scribe to hand out the literature to say, do not buy Whirlpool, KitchenAid, and there was a whole list of them. And, yes, we need a defense committee for every political prisoner, and this is what we're aiming at. And so New York was representative, Eric and
Debbie. I want to say Eric and Debbie and Richie from the Anarchist Black Cross.
Yep.
Never stopped their vigils outside any store that would dare sell a Whirlpool product. And this is what I meant in the beginning of our program when I say, aren't you tired of doing the same old thing and getting the same old results? That's the definition of insanity. We need to change our game. We need to step up our game. If not everybody can be a warrior like Sekou Odinga or Brother Larry Pinckney, we can't all do that, but we can do more than march.
That's
boycott. Go ahead, Reverend.
Absolutely. And one of the good things is that that came out of this, the Mayor Hightower, he's no longer the mayor of Benton Harbor. Matter of fact, he lost by a landslide.
I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was such a major defeat, not only for him, but also for Whirlpool. Then he got fired from his job at the hospital. And they made him do an early retirement because they didn't want him around no more because he couldn't do anything for them. See, this is another thing that black people need to know. You see, you sit around here and want to ride with them.
Right.
And they feed you, you know. And when they have no use for you no more, then they take that spoon out of your mouth, you see. But they don't know it until it's too late. So we have to educate the people. We got to keep educating them. Let them know that your day is coming if you ride in the same buggy wagon with them. And we must tell them. And, you know, what they do with that information is on them. We have an obligation to tell them. And whether they like it or not, whether they want to hear it or not, we tell them anyway. I used the term when I was inside the prison system, stick and move. And when I told them about stick and move, I give them the information and I keep moving. You see, and even though that I was surrounded with really people there who really, really supported me, I had to tell them anyway and keep moving because you don't want to get tied up into something inside the prison system that you can't handle, you see. So that is more important. But we have to stay focused. We have to stay focused and understand that we got victories, whether we like it or not, and every victory we get, we should run out and shout about it because we don't get many. But when we do get them, we got to let the people know.
Yep.
Thank you for that, and look forward to hearing more from you on the program, on the streets of Detroit, on the streets of Flint, Michigan, and on the streets of Chicago. Welcome back.
All right now.
Amen.
I want to say we're going to call up Sister Ann next. But, Brother Joel, we're going to let you take us home. We see you were able to join us this evening, and we're very, very pleased. So, Joel, Brother Joel, please hang in here. Sister Ann, please give us an update. We know we've got a couple of our political prisoners who are in crisis. Please update us.
Okay, first of all, go ahead. I'm sorry.
New Jericho.
Yes, I am Ann Lamb. I work with the New York City chapter of the Jericho Movement, which is a national movement and also an international movement. Jan Lahman, our friend Jan Lahman, our lovely brother Jan Lahman, is still in the hole. All right, it's been a long time since March 21st that he's been in the hole because he wrote two political statements, one about the Women's March in Washington and, of course, his beautiful statement that he wrote for Lynn. And to say that either of these is a violation of institutional security is totally beyond me. So people can go to jerichony.org. Please go to jerichony.org. It's right on the front page. You can't miss it. You can write to Jan, which would be wonderful, you know, for him to get letters. You can call the warden. You can email the warden. You can fax the warden. You can contact the regional director. You can contact the director of the BOP in D.C., Jan is one of the Ohio 7 political prisoners. There's only two who are still locked up, Jan and his co-defendant, Tom Manning. And they were convicted in 1996 of direct actions to protest U.S. support for the white supremacist apartheid regime in South Africa, illegal U.S. attacks on Nicaragua and El Salvador, and repression against advocates of Puerto Rican self-determination. They did great direct actions. They bombed places like Union Carbide and stuff, which certainly deserved it. But really, Jan, you know, really needs our support right now. I just wanted to say briefly, Jaleel has had his cell raided 4 times in the past month by COs for no apparent reason. But he has written this wonderful blog, so I would encourage people, go to freejaleel.com and go to the little blog tab and read his blog number 44, Carnage, which is how horrified he was about the children killed at the Ariana Grande concert. And Jaleel is a Muslim, and he writes as a Muslim about these horrible tactics of ISIS. So that's two things. The third thing, and then there's also Veronica Bowers, who was recently moved to the medical center at, I can't think of the name of it now, the same medical center where Tom Manning is down in Butner, North Carolina, FMC Butner. So we're watching that to see, you know, what's going on with him. He's having some tests done and stuff. So some kind of medical problem, but we don't know exactly what yet. So we'll have more news on that when we get it. I also went to see Seth. I know, and I know people who listen to this station know that Seth has been having, you know, ongoing, you know, problems with his diabetes for 17 years. So I wrote up a little report of my visit. I won't go into the whole report because, you know, I did some background for people who might not know what's going on. Dr. Wolf, who is the facility, or the prison, as I prefer to say, doctor, had Seth in the quote-unquote infirmary, I have to say, because it certainly is, all last week, and that's where I visited him on Father's Day. The last time I visited Seth when he was in the infirmary, he was allowed to come up to the regular visiting room. However, this time I had to visit in the infirmary, which was an educational experience for me. When I arrived to the visiting room, the sergeant called down to the infirmary to ask if Seth could come up to the visiting room. I also asked if I could at least bring down some water and light snackage and was told that I could not, right? When I was on the elevator to the infirmary, I asked the CO, who we now know his name, CO Stout, but he wasn't wearing his name badge, so I didn't know his name at the time. I asked the CO, who was not wearing his name badge, when visiting was over, and he told me, "We will kick you out of here at 2 p.m. I called the prison today. Official visiting hours in the infirmary are from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This was fine with me because we were supposed to come out with the 2:30 escort to get back on the bus. So Seth and I are in a locked glass room, small visiting room right in front of the CO's desk. At around 11:30 a.m., a technician came to do the finger stick. He was very professional. He really was. I really liked the way he did it. He placed the vial of insulin on the table so Seth and I could see exactly what it was being injected with. Seth stated his sugars had been 70 in the morning, but the finger stick monitor showed his sugars were 280 plus. Right? The technician then injected him with 6 cc's of insulin. So, of course, the standard practice is the patient is to eat shortly after receiving the insulin, even if the sugars are high, so you don't get a precipitous drop. This will allow for a gradual decline in the sugars. Since the food cart had gone by shortly before that, we had to make sure Seth got his lunch. Luckily, one of the nurses happened to arrive at that time, and I knocked on the glass to gain her attention. I asked for the lunch tray, but she couldn't hear me, so I made an eating motion with my hands, and she went down the hall to speak with the COs, and then shook her head. So I made the motion of Seth getting an injection, and she nodded her head, and the CO arrived with the food tray within 5 minutes. So kudos to the nurse. She did the right thing and did not let herself be intimidated, because a lot of them will just do whatever the COs say. So I finally got to see the infamous Class B diet, the Class B diet that Dr. Konigsman insists is an adequate diabetic diet. I don't know where he went to medical school, but he obviously doesn't know much about diabetes and nutrition. The lunch consisted of white pasta, a large hamburger on a white roll with ketchup, and beets, all of which were cold also. But, of course, these all turn into sugar in the body. So your sugars are high. Let's make sure we give you more sugar, right? And they also keep giving Seth milk with every meal, even though he's lactose intolerant. He's had diarrhea off and on for almost the entire week. So I took the little milk container. So this caused the CO Stout, now that we know his name, CO Stout, big, tall CO Stout with his glasses, young guy in very good shape. I have never seen somebody move so fast in my life. He leaps out from behind the desk. He unlocks the door. He rushes into the visiting room. He comes within an inch of physically assaulting me. He's literally in my face with his fists right in my face, and he's screaming, "That's what I thought! You did this on purpose so you can eat his food. Right, like I would want to.
Oh, God.
But he's amazing. Like screaming. I mean, this guy totally went off. I have not seen anybody so enraged in a long time. So, like, I just sat there quietly and I said, I was told when I came in I couldn't bring anything to eat in here. I'm only drinking your milk because Seth is lactose intolerant and this gives him diarrhea. The thought of anyone actually wanting to eat this food, which I would not serve even to a rat, was so hilarious that Seth and I burst out laughing. We couldn't help but, like, record each other's eyes. We just couldn't help but we just started laughing. We were laughing so hard we were crying. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, who would want to eat this food, right? Meanwhile, the CEO, Stout,
and
now that we know his name.
We call them death camps, okay? That's how we call them death camps.
Now, that's definitely a death camp. There ain't no question about it. But, you know, sometimes you got to laugh not to cry. You know what I mean? What I really wanted to do was say to him, oh, you want to hit me? Come on. Come on. I would have loved him to touch me. I could have sued him for assault like crazy, man. But he didn't, so. But I said that to Seth. I said, I was being really cool. But I said, if I had been out myself outside, I would have said to him, you want to hit me? Come on. You don't know me. Anyway,
and
we were laughing away. I'm going to try to make it quick. But... That was like the big thing. But right now he's back. I talked to him tonight. He's got the pump back. So this is a victory for people who have been calling and writing, you know, up to the prison. He's got the pump back as of today. He's hoping to be out of the infirmary, you know, hopefully tomorrow or the next day. Because the other thing that happens when somebody's in the so-called infirmary is that they can't get their food package. And Seth's food package is literally saving his life, okay? And that I'm supposed to bring up on Saturday. So I really want him out of there before then, you know. And the other thing they did was the visitation is supposed to end at 2. They didn't let me out of there till after 3 o'clock. I was like,
all right,
oh,
thank
I'm
you,
supposed
Ann.
To walk through walls.
Hello? Okay, Ann, thank you so
yeah.
much. And
sorry
keep
to,
us informed. Jolo,
oh,
are you in the house? Your mic is
hello.
Open.
I can hear you.
Hello?
I can hear you.
Speak up, Joel.
Oh, hello?
Yes, I can
hello?
Hear you, Joel. Yes,
oh, yes.
I can hear you.
Hi, I guess getting close to the closing time. I'm sorry I wasn't able to call in earlier, but I was being kept busy with something else and couldn't really get away. Anyway, I heard the last few moments, and it was an amazing report by Ann Lamb. And it's really great to hear everybody coming at the system and staying strong and not having been intimidated by everything that's been done to make us think that this is the way things always have been and always will be, and that we ought to just accept it and collaborate with the system against all our fellows so that maybe we as individuals could get ahead of them at their expense. And like Ann said, then they take that spoon away at a certain point anyway. So... anyway, I just want to say hello to everybody out there and talk about what an honor it is to be on this program and hear about the political prisoners that have fought so hard for all of us.
Yep.
Thank you.
Would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means.